Thus, these people have no information of any kind other than that which they have known from birth. Therefore, it stands to reason that when they have the chance to set up their own society, it will closely mirror that from which they ran. Think about it. What other way do they know? Of course they will use the model society that they are familiar with, albeit changed, so that the elements from which they wish to escape are excised. They will take the colors, the discipline and organization, and they will use this. For change and freedom are dangerous and frightening things. To make a complete break with everything you know, even if it has been used to oppress you, is to take a step out into the darkness and the unknown that demands a particular kind of courage. The courage that it takes some time to amass when you have done little but follow orders from the day you were born.
J.B. shrugged.
Yeah, okay. So it all boils down to the fact that they've always been organized in a certain way, so they just keep on being that way. I guess I can understand that. And if I can, then I can't see why any of the rest of us would have any trouble. But why are they so trusting? And why so shitty at combat?
Again, my dear John Barrymore, you are already fully cognizant of the answer to that question, if you did but stop and think.
JB's not the only one who's had to think. If I follow your argument, then the answer to the second question is simple. In Atlantis, only some people are selected for combat, those who make up the Nightcrawlers. They'd tend to be the kind of people who wouldn't want to escape, and so few, if any, of them would end up here. Everyone else in the Ville is kept away from the concepts and skills of fighting for fear they'd form a threat to the established hierarchy. So these people know all about the discipline of living this way, but nothing about combat.
It is gratifying, my dear, to know that someone else has been thinking about our situation.
I've been thinking about why they trust us as well. It's so obvious when you think about it, but it's just not something that would readily occur to us with our knowledge of the world. They trust us because they don't know how to do anything else. They have no concept of duplicity. Everything is just so simple to them. We aren't part of the battle between Memphis and Atlantis, so we pose no threat to them. If we are not the enemy they know, then we aren't an enemy.
Exactly. They have been confined to such a narrow existence for so long that they have no conception of anything beyond the boundaries that they know. It would be easy to abuse their hospitality, as they would have no notion of what was occurring until it was far too late.
Yeah, but we're not going to do that, Doc.
I am not suggesting that we should. We should, however, be aware that this is how they are looking at things. It may be necessary at some point to explain to them concepts that we take for granted, and that they may find alien.
Tell you what else it means. It means that if the people of Memphis are like this, then there's a good chance that they're like that in Atlantis, too. Maybe even this Odyssey. He may rule with an iron hand, but he's only going to know the rules that have been handed down by the Odysseys before him.
Well, that's worth thinking about. It could be the key to breaking the Ville open.
That would be good. Just think of all the secrets that we might find.
Shit, not care about secrets. Just chill, fucker, and leave.
Jack's right. Secrets? Some old pre-dark mumbo-jumbo shit that they've kept going? We've seen enough of that crap. We agreed to help Lemur offload this Odyssey. Once that's done, we can just get the hell out of here and go somewhere where there are people we can understand.
Christy kept her eyes firmly fixed on Doc. She had a feeling he had a greater interest in the secrets of Atlantis than he was letting on. This might have been the case for Doc, but the others had more prosaic and pressing concerns. During the few days that they had been in Memphis, they had gleaned a reasonable impression of the Ville. Walled in by the makeshift, though structurally solid, ring of rubble, the buildings gave little sign of the architectural and Masonic skills of the inhabitants. Time had been at a premium in the construction, and so the buildings had been left relatively unchanged. However, some had been damaged and then made good by the skilled craftsmen who now inhabited them. And these alterations and repairs showed the kind of craft and attention to detail that was the hallmark of the people. These repairs were simple, and yet finished with a grace of line that marked them out from the weather-beaten and sometimes ornate and ugly buildings they made good. In this way, even though they hadn't had the time to make a Ville of their own, the innate sensibilities of the Memphis people had impressed themselves upon their surroundings. It wasn't just these running repairs. The decoration of the area within the walls contrasted sharply with the buildings on the outside. Within, everything was either painted in the red and white color scheme that had become so familiar, or was in the process of being painted in this manner. Members of the Ville went about this task daily with a slow and steady hand, in no hurry to finish, but determined to do a good job. Again, the attention to detail and the work ethic that had been ingrained in them from the day they were born was readily apparent. Within the walls, the inhabitants seemed to feel relatively safe, yet the companions became aware of an undercurrent that ran through the Ville. It seemed as though the inhabitants always had an eye cast over their shoulder and an ear cocked for their early warning system. The nightcrawlers had never come by day, yet even in the hours of light, the citizens of Memphis seemed to walk in the shadow of fear. For those who were part of the Sec Force, these fears were channeled into a desire to learn how to fight back. Mark had started to learn some of those skills when he'd begun to train for the nightcrawlers, yet there was little he was able to impart to those keen to learn. As they watched him, it soon became obvious to Ryan, Jack, and JB why this would be. The seriousness of their situation weighed heavily on the Sec Chief and made him impatient in dealing with his men. As the would-be soldiers lined up to practice on crudely made mannequins, as they fired at targets from standing and running positions, as they learned hand-to-hand with blunted knives and also unarmed, so it became apparent that Mark soon tired of their ineptitude. He hectored and bullied them so that they felt that they could do nothing right. The more he yelled, the less confident his men became.
Ryan, you need talk to him. Maybe men always be shit, maybe not. Not get ass inside with him shouting all the time.
Ryan knew what Jack meant. In combat, you made the fear work for you. No one ever went into a firefight feeling relaxed, but you didn't yield to it. You turned it in on itself so that you froze inside, became still, like ice on the surface of a river. You acted solely by instinct. These men weren't getting the chance to hone that instinct. They were being undermined psychologically. Mark's own frustration with what he saw as a race against time was reflecting back off his own men, with the result that there would never be enough time for them to get it right. JB watched Ryan as he observed the training and could tell what was going through his head.
They're keen. They look pretty strong. And they're not cowards. We know that for certain. If you talk to the Sec Chief, then me and Jack can start to work with the Sec.
They were standing on the edge of a fenced-in yard that stretched for over 1,000 yards in width and around 5,000 in length. At one time, before Skydark, it had served as the parking lot for a Cineplex that had long since crumbled to the elements. The neglected skeleton of the building threw shadows over the packed earth and traces of asphalt that now made up the Sec training ground. Ryan strode over to where Mark was addressing his men. A row of targets stood about 70 yards from where the group of eight were clustered, and the seven trainees were covered in dust and grime, scored by grazes and welts of bruises. The targets in the distance were splattered by blobs of paint and dye that were unevenly distributed. As he approached, Ryan could hear the tail end of Mark's rant.
What kinds of fools are you if you truly think this? You must learn to adjust your aim and fire as you move, not stop dead and take vital seconds to sight the target. By the gods! If you do this, then you will surely forfeit your lives. Not just yours. The lives of everyone in Memphis are dependent upon us and how well we fare when we come up against the enemy. And...
Mark! Stop berating your boys for a second and tell me what's going on. Why are the targets covered in dye?
Oh, Ryan, good to see you. Good to see someone who knows what he's doing.
Mark, what you're trying to do doesn't happen overnight. It takes some time.
Time is something we don't have.
Maybe, but it seems to me that you don't have much choice. Boys have to grow to be men, and that takes time. Meantime, you make the best of it. You can't fight that the way you can fight a sticky.
Fight a what?
I'll tell you about it sometime. Right now, we need to talk about a few things.
Ryan put his arm around the Sec Chief's shoulders and led him away from his men. Jack and JB took this as their cue to move in. While Ryan continued his discussion with the rapidly calming Mark, the two fighters stood in front of the Sec detachment.
Things not going great?
The men shuffled their feet, looking embarrassed. Then one of them, rubbing idly at a graze that ran from elbow to wrist, spoke up.
It's not easy. We've never had to do this before, and Mark expects perfection every time.
I believe that we're all improving, but he makes us feel as though we're going backward. The targets have more hits than ever before. Not in vital areas, it's true. But it's hard. None of us ever fired a blaster before we fled from Atlantis, where Mark began to train as a crawler. And these blasters, they're not like the ones we use when we scout and patrol. They feel completely different.
The boy shrugged as he held up a blunt-nosed blaster. The armorer beckoned him to hand it over.
Dark Knight. It's a paintball gun. Next to useless. These blasters have a completely different weight and balance to what you use in combat. And these little fuckers...
He squeezed the ball so hard that it burst, splattering dye over his hand, water running down his arm.
They don't fly like any kind of ammo you'd use. How can you learn to fire straight with shit like this?
Mark figures that we at least don't waste ammo this way.
Stupid idea. Know how to fire these, but not real blaster.
If you use these to train, and you use your own blasters when you're up against an enemy, the balance and aim of the thing is going to be completely different. Problem with that is that if you're not used to using blasters, as you people aren't, then you're not going to be able to make the adjustment in the heat of battle. And that's you buying a farm.
So what are we supposed to do about it? Mark makes the rules.
JP looked over to where the sec chief was engrossed in conversation with Ryan.
Maybe we can do something about that.
While Jack and JB had been talking to the sec man, Ryan had been trying to convince Mark that his men should train with live ammo.
Listen to me, Mark. I know what it's like to be a leader. Everything comes down to you. And you're not just looking out for yourself, but for everyone else. And it's hard. Real hard. But right now, all you're doing is making your men feel like shit. You gotta cut them some slack. They have to build confidence. Bawling them out all the time isn't gonna do that. And they're gonna have problems with those chicken shit blasters, with different weights and balances. You gotta train using the weapons they're gonna use.
I know that makes sense, but...
But what?
What about ammo? Our supplies are so limited.
How much do you need? It strikes me, from what you say and what we know, that a lot of the combat here is hand-to-hand and uses blades. That's the way the Nightcrawlers work. Maybe you should be concentrating on that some more.
We do, but I want to put us in a position where we can kill them before they get close enough to engage in that manner. Rather than purely defensive, I want our strategy to be offensive.
Well, that sounds good to me. Makes a lot of sense. But you can't run before you can walk. While you're working on your long-term strategy, then you're going to lose men in hand-to-hand. There's got to be some kind of balance.
You're right, I suppose. It's just that we're not equipped to look after ourselves as a community, not yet. And I have to...
Fireblast, man, you don't have to do anything. That's why we agreed to stay. We'll help you take that weight, make it easier to carry.
Mark smiled. The first time his grim visage had cracked in the short time that Ryan had known him.
That's more like it.
Ryan grinned broadly and slapped him on the shoulder.
Now, let's do something about getting your men into shape.
But there's something I must do first.
While Ryan followed in his wake, Mark strode over to where his men were waiting, and he took the paintball blaster from JB's hands, holding it out to his men.
See this?
The trainees exchanged bemused glances, then nodded.
This was a mistake. Forget it. We start over. And this time we learn properly.
Pulling back his arm, he threw the blaster toward the standing row of targets. Ryan couldn't help but note that he had an excellent throwing arm.
Okay, these people are going to show us how we should be fighting. I suggest that we take note of what they have to impart. These may be the most important lessons we ever have to learn.
That's some build-up, ain't it, Ryan? Too bad Millie and Christy can't be here to help.
Yeah, whatever they're doing now, I bet Sirius Jack they're not enjoying it.
I can't believe that we're doing this.
Mildred furiously began to stitch another tunic.
We should be teaching these idiots how to fight, not learning how to sew. I'm a doctor, for God's sakes. I already know how to sew wounds. Who needs this shit?
Christy placed her tongue firmly in her cheek to prevent herself from laughing out loud.
So you never really learned to sew clothing then? Back in Harmony, it was one of the first things that Mother Sonia taught me.
Sweetie, I always wanted to be out playing baseball, and I never bothered taking home ec in high school.
I'll have to take your word for that, because I have no idea what you're talking about.
Don't make me explain.
Mildred caught Christy's eye and could see how hard the woman was trying to contain her mirth.
Yeah, very funny.
It could be worse, Mildred.
Yeah? How?
It was obvious that the men and women of Memphis had learned their roles from living in Atlantis, and that Atlantis had been run very much as a patriarchy.